Hello, racing fans. Edison Hatter back with another episode of First Over with Edison Hatter, this time to discuss the Saturday, September 18th, 2021 card at Woodbine Mohawk. It's a lovely 13-race program for a second Saturday in a row, a big 13-race card. And again, there is a big race on the card. This time it comes up as race number 10. It's the Canadian Trotting Classic for over $600,000. But we'll get to that a little bit later on. First things first, welcome in my guest for the day. Happy to be joined by the voice of Rosecroft Raceway, Pete Metters. Pete, welcome.
Edison, how are you, my man?
Doing very well. It's great to have you on. And Pete, we can talk a lot about your background, not just in racing, but also in sports in general. So we'll start with asking just what you do in general. You've got Navy, you've got the Nats, you do some radio stuff, you do Rosecroft stuff, you kind of do it all. So talk a little bit about that.
I've been pretty fortunate. You know, the only thing I've ever wanted to do since I was 5 years old was work in sports and being a sports announcer of some kind. You know, I used to go to Rosecroft as a kid. Fell in love with harness racing at a very young age, thanks to Roger Hammer. And, you know, it's been with me ever since. And, you know, to be able to participate in it, you know, in the way that you and I get to participate in it, let's face it, there's not that many jobs within the industry like that. And I just consider myself very lucky to participate in the way that I do, because I love the sport. I love the people of Maryland. I love Maryland racing. I've known some of these people for an incredibly long time. Brian Callahan, who trains in Maryland, was the best man at my wedding. And, you know, I mean, I go back to, you know, guys like, in addition to Roger, you know, Russell McGee and Jimmy Covington with Dr. Leroy Johnson down in Pocomoke City really gave me my first chance to sit behind some and learn how to jog and train and do those types of things. So, you know, Cliff Green and his family were very instrumental, you know, in aiding my knowledge and love for the sport as well. So, I'm glad we can keep doing it. And you know, the other stuff that I've been able to do, you know, hosting a show every day in DC, from 3 to 7 in the afternoon and, doing Nats games. In fact, Saturday I'll be doing, the Nationals and the Colorado Rockies on the radio. And because Navy is off and, you know, being the voice of the Naval Academy midshipmen and those incredible student athletes with what they sign up to do, not only to play Division I athletics, but, you know, Edison, you follow college sports. You're a big fan of Stanford. You know how difficult that is academically. Navy is a school just like that. You know, it's the best and brightest. And then, of course, for a minimum of 5 years after graduation, you know, they commit to protecting our country. So to be able to tell the stories of those student athletes is an honor. It's a privilege. It's something I don't take lightly. But obviously, you know, being able to do it, you know, literally 20 minutes from where I grew up, it's the best of both worlds for me. That's for sure.
And so, Pete, you know, I always got to ask about it, because one thing I'm super jealous of is the fact that you are in possession of your very own World Series ring after the Nats won in 2019.
That is correct. I broadcasted 15 games that year. We went 12-3 in the games that I broadcasted. So in addition to that, I also have some post-game duties with them as well. So being an employee of the team on that level and for the Lerner family to include everyone the way they did. Anyone that was either a part-time or full-time employee as of October 31st of that year when they sealed the World Series against the Houston Astros, the Lerner family purchased a ring for those employees. And just to be included in that, you know, I've got a couple of bowl rings with Navy, but man, when you see that World Series ring, man, it's different. So, you know, it's a little shinier. It stays in a box, locked up. Very rarely does it ever come out. But to, again, I mean, think about it. There are still franchises in the sport, Edison, who have never been to a World Series, let alone won one. So to have a World Series ring with my name on it, very, very special indeed.
So, Pete, you know, I know you saw my message last week. Of course, it was great to get to listen to you the last couple of weeks on my drive to the Meadowlands from Freehold, catching a little bit of you on the radio, calling some Navy football. So we'll give you a chance at the end of the show to plug all of your work you do for Navy, the Nats, and your radio show. But for now, I'm sure you can join me in echoing a little bit of promotion for Rosecroft. Sunday, October the 3rd, we get back down there. Sundays and Wednesday, 7:15 first post. And Potomac Pace should be coming up Sunday, November the 14th this year. So we got a good fall meet coming up.
Yeah, I just saw Gina's schedule, saw that the Potomac Pace is going to be on the 14th, which is great for me. Because we play Louisville in basketball the next day. That was my only concern, was whether there was going to be a basketball game that got dropped in there on the 14th. So very fortunate. You know, we've got the Veterans Classic against Virginia Tech 2 days before that, and then we go to Louisville on Monday. So looking forward to the Potomac Pace. I think, you know, Edison, I think some as you and I have participated in it, I think we've really surprised some people in the industry with what we've been able to do with the Potomac Pace. Obviously, Pete Hanley has worked incredibly hard each year to try and bring as competitive a field to Rosecroft. The fact that it's a Sunday night and there's not a lot of other activity. We've had the top drivers, you know, in North America come down and drive in that. So I think that's added to it. I mean, it's given us those rare conversations with the Dexter Dunns, the Yannick Gingras, Tim Tietrich, Corey Callahan, all those guys that have come here, you know, fairly consistently. For this race, it's been a great joy to have that race and to have Rosecroft have a signature event that at least for one night gets us on the harness racing map. And you don't have many, you know, as we like to classify them, A tracks, B tracks. And, you know, clearly because we only race two nights a week and 54 days a year, you know, Rosecroft probably fits into the B track mold. But to have a signature race like that of our own that attracts the top trainers, the top drivers, and the top older horses, it's really made for a great night of harness racing for us, and certainly looking forward to November 14th coming up to highlight the meet. Plus, we'll have some of the best two-year-olds in Maryland who still have their sire stakes on the 5/8 mile track to contest after just doing that here recently down at Ocean Downs. So looking forward to seeing those young freshmen pacers and trotters come to Rosecroft here over the next couple of months.
Before we get started in handicapping this Wood by Mohawk card for Saturday night, I usually like to ask my guests kind of a handicapping question. And I thought about this one this morning after I was done handicapping this card. And because I was busy this morning, I had to handicap this card last night without morning lines. So when you're handicapping a card, do you consider morning lines at all, really? Or how do you use those in your handicapping?
It's a great question, because I think from track to track, we've come to a point in our industry where there are some places where we trust the morning line and some places where we just throw it out completely. Cards like this, and I caution people all the time when we have stakes cards in our industry are great for owners, drivers, breeders. Sometimes stakes cards, in particular sire stakes cards, can be brutal for the better because you got a ton of chalk on a lot of those cards. The morning line, you know, a lot of times, look, the morning line guy or gal, whoever does it, you know, they don't want to be disrespectful to the other horses in the field. But there are horses that end up on the morning line at 5-2, 2-1, 9-5 that you know are going to be 1-9. Okay. There are horses that get respected at 10-1, 15-1 that you know are going to be 60-1 or higher. So I think you have to take each track, you know, for what it is. I think we trust tracks like the Meadowlands, tracks like Mohawk, obviously, because of the class of the horses and the people that do the work there, you trust that a little bit better. So I think it all depends on the track. I mean, computerized morning lines, I like to throw those out for the most part. And in a lot of cases, you know, you have to take into account a horse racing at a tougher track that may be coming down to a B track. And, you know, I don't think those horses get rated on the morning line properly because, you know, you and I know as people who watch the races and handicap the races, those horses are going to get bet hard when they come down in class or come down to a different track. And sometimes in particular, the computerized morning line never figures that in. And those and maybe a driver change, where, you know, you may pick up a better driver as well. I don't think those things get factored in to a computerized morning line very well. That's why I think you got to be incredibly careful with that. The more knowledge you can have of other tracks and kind of come up with your own bias or favoritism for a horse coming from a tougher circuit to another one. Sometimes you can steal races, quite frankly, when the betting public doesn't necessarily take that into account. So a lot of different things. I think it comes down to your own personal choice. Do you trust the morning line or not at certain tracks? And I think certainly a place like Mohawk that we're talking about today is one of those places. For the most part, it's trustworthy. It carries you to at least a really good angle and a fair evaluation of what the horse might be in that particular class.
Let's jump into some handicapping, and we'll just jump right into this early pick five sequence. Let's get started with race number one. It's on the pace for 16,000. Non-winners of 8,000 in their last five starts, or non-winners of 18,500 in their last 10 starts. And your early pick five ticket, you're using three horses in here. So tell us who you're using and why.
Start with the number three, Shadow in Red. Love the form that the horse is in. You know, again, when you're talking about, I mean, this is a mild class drop for this horse coming into this race. Been racing in the non-winners of three and racing incredibly competitive, climbing the ladder here. Two starts back, picked up a nice win, a real gutty finish, winning in 49-4. Granted, slower last quarter because they sizzled for three quarters. So it also made me kind of hesitate a little bit, yet three starts back. You know, with a more well-rated race, certainly a much more rated third quarter for a horse that comes off the pace, you know, like he does, coming home in 26-3. That pops my eye. Last week, you know, finishing second at nearly 7-1. So I'm going to stay with Shadow in Red. I think Shadow in Red deserves major consideration coming up in here. The real mystery in here is for Hail Christian N. I mean, this is a horse that's raced at a much higher class, has been off form, but shows that win back on July 31st and 49 that, you know, at least grabs your attention. You know the horse is capable and continues to come down the ladder, picks up Andrew McCarthy for a second consecutive race here, has the ability to blast off the gate. And a couple of the top contenders in here don't necessarily have that ability. A couple have the ability but haven't been able to sustain it. I think HP Napoleon is a horse who super effort last time, but I against these horses that are coming down in class, I had to avoid HP Napoleon here. I think if you have the ability to go a little bit deeper in this field, maybe that's a horse you have to respect off of his mile last time as well. But I left him off of this particular ticket. And to me, I'll be interested to see the tote board here. Reagan Blue Chip has missed a ton of time. We have not seen him on the racetrack since March 13th. Couple of qualifiers last week, drew post eight. Really no opportunity to get into that same race I was just talking about with HP Napoleon, who finished second in there. Reunites with James McDonald, who did some terrific work with him. You go back and look at those miles last November and December. Again, probably a smidge better competition. And this horse was really doing some good things at the end of last year. Clearly, you know, you miss that amount of time, it's a huge concern. But this is a horse that was first or second in 9 of his 13 races last year as a three-year-old. And I think last time just needed the race just to be back on the track under the lights. And I think you may get a little bit of a better effort from the 10 Reagan Blue Chip, who I think could be a bombs away in here because this horse is saddled with post 10.
So, Pete, I'm a little bit different than you in race one. I end up using the 4, the 6, and the 8. I'm with you on the 4, Hail Christian, and that's kind of the interesting one here for me, the big class drop there, so definitely have to use. The 6, HP Napoleon, another one that I used, who I know you touched on as well, that second-place finish beaten just by a neck against this type of company last Saturday. And then for the 8, Let's Get Pickled, this is one that had a win from post 8, a pretty good win against non-winners of a three life, and then went to this level last time out and didn't put in a great effort from the rail, but I'm willing to give him one more chance here with Jody Jameson staying aboard. So it's 4, 6, and 8 for me here in race one. And as I said, I did the handicapping for this without the morning line. So it looks like we are looking at, or actually, I didn't realize, I guess we got a scratch in here of the three. So actually, I'm looking at some different numbers here than you are. So for me, Hail Christian is actually now the 3 horse. For HP Napoleon, it ended up being the 5. And for Let's Get Pickled, moves in one slot as well to the 7. So it's actually 3-5-7 for me in there. Oops. Here in this first leg. So that is a 5-2 morning line favorite, a 3-1 second choice, and a 4-1 third choice. So I guess it's good to know that I can handicap as well as the morning line odds maker. So 3-5-7 for me here in race 1. As we move on to race two, that's the She's a Great Lady elimination for the two-year-old fillies on the pace for a purse of $35,000. And who'd you use in here, Pete?
To me, it's a two-horse battle. But again, these are so stakes horses like this because they've been competing on different circuits. The two Queen of Success, clearly Love Life at the Red Mile. In sizzling form, great connections, obviously, for Tony Alagna, Caviar Farms, which is nearby here in Vienna, Virginia. They've had a terrific run of success in this industry. Andy McCarthy has really gotten along with his Captain Treacherous filly, and I think she's in terrific form. Shows a lot of versatility as well. And, you know, two starts back, coming home in 26 and change. Queen of Success, I think, is in a perfect position here. But, you know, her Caviar Farms mate right next to her, Treacherous Kiss, you know, has been in terrific stakes competition, Pennsylvania, you know, in the Kindergarten Stakes at the Meadowlands, two stakes in a row at Woodbine now. So she is certainly battle tested without a win. If you're looking for a horse that might be sitting at 6 or 7 to 1, that's a horse certainly to take into account. You know, Joyride Hanover, what a year for Eric Good with Hellabaloo and Eddie Dennis. They send this filly up to Nifty Norman now for this race. Been very competitive in the New York Sire Stakes program. But the other one is the 8, Prohibition Legal. You know, going with the 2 and the 8, Prohibition Legal, 5 for 5 so far, has been fantastic in Canada, all over the place. James McDonald board here. So you're getting good driver. You're getting terrific horse. And again, another horse that has showed versatility in this field. So to me, it's a two horse race off the top. Neither are sure things because I think it's a deeper field because of the different circuits that some of these horses have been on. But clearly the 2 and 8 to me, at least probably going to be bet pretty heavily here, but their form is fantastic right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I use both of them in here. You know, we've had a lot of, it feels like, battles of the unbeatens lately at the Woodbine Mohawk, and this is yet another one. Queen of Success, the perfect 4 for 4, and Prohibition Legal, now a perfect 5 for 5. But the other one I throw in there is the other horse who likes to win in this field, and that's the 7, Free to Be Me, who is 15-1 on the morning line. And I know she's been racing against easier, of course, over at O'Carrollton and a Truro Raceway, but I thought the effort two back on August 28th in the Eternal Cam Nation at Woodbine Mohawk was a pretty good effort. I know she finishes 5th, but she went 52-2, so she at least proves she has the speed on a 7/8 mile track to keep with some of these. So I have to work out a trip and post 7, but I'll throw in a big number and see if we can't get the upset there. But I definitely agree with you. The 2 and the 8 are definitely the ones to beat here, so it'll be 2, 7, and 8 for me in race 2. So race 3 is the She's a Great Lady elimination, the other elimination on the pace for $35,000, a field of 8 here, and who do you use in here, Pete?
Looking at this race here, and I know I may have botched this when I gave it to you, you know, I could do two different things here, okay? I could use 4 horses here, or I could use 1 horse here. And it all depends on what your, you know, what your spending limits are right now. My ticket's pretty cheap as it is, but you know, I'll go 4 deep here just because of the quality of the field. If I was going to single, I would certainly single the 1, Nikki Hill. She's been, you know, in her, you know, 3 starts, you know, on the racetrack in meaningful races, you know, fantastic. I mean, obviously, you know, the Speed Plant Pocono wins in 50-3, you know, really not tested. The 2-year-old race at the Meadowlands, just to get a tightener in there. She throws in a 26-3 closing quarter. Her debut, she threw in a 26-2 closing quarter. But, and I know this is an elimination, so it's not going to be a final where I think everybody's driving, you know, the feet off their horses. She's really not had, I mean, that race at Pocono, you know, 55 and change to the half after she had brushed to the lead. You know, really never really challenged from that. And I don't know if we're going to get that super challenge here for her, but clearly if she is, the 2, Just Divine, first or second in every start so far. I mean, she's done nothing wrong. Edison finished 2nd in the New York Sire Stakes final as well to got the green light, who's certainly been a horse in amazing form as well. 6, Balance, is another one that, you know, I mean, done nothing wrong in the 4 starts, has a win, here as well at Woodbine, three starts back and 53-1, probably, you know, but you see the progression, 52-1 and then 52 last time, just missing out in Ontario Sire Stakes Gold races there to Silver Label. And the eight fade out is another one that, you know, five of six, first or second so far this year, and plenty of experience here at Woodbine Mohawk, two starts back, a nice win in 51 and three. Obviously, we're handicapping off of the proof. And I think if you want to eliminate one of those horses because you don't want to go too deep, whichever one Doug McNair chooses in that race maybe is the way to go here because he is listed on both of those horses. So, like I said, I could easily single Nikki Hill if you want to go that route, but I could also go four deep because I think those four horses have some pretty solid talent. And I didn't even put, you know, Boudoir Hanover, who probably belongs in this thing as well. So I think this is by far an incredibly competitive elimination. And the ironic thing is, I think a good horse or two is going to get left out of the final just because of how deep this is.
So Pete, just to circle back real quick to the first race, this is my fault here for not having given you some final changes, but I recognize my numbers changed because of that scratch off of the proof that we were handicapping on. So you had 3, 4, and 10 in there. So I'm guessing your numbers become 2, 3, and 9 in that first race. So you have I'm Not Bad, Hail Christian N, and Reagan Blue Chip.
Shadow and Red, Hail Christian N, and Reagan Blue Chip.
Oh, okay. So sorry, totally my fault in this. Then okay, so Shadow and Red's actually been scratched. So you're actually 3 and 9 in there then. So that'll help your price a little bit there, which I guess is okay because originally you gave me 2, 6, and 8 in this third race, which I was going to ask how you were choosing to leave out Nikki Hill.
Because it's my messy handwriting, you know. My third grade teacher, Alfreda Adams, said my handwriting was chicken scratch, and she was 150% correct. So I kind of smudged over it here, but definitely 1, 2, 6, and 8.
Okay. Well, anyway, when we give our recap tickets at the end, we'll make sure we get it right here so everyone listening at home knows for sure what our numbers are and who our selections are. But so 1, 2, 6, 8 for you. For me, I'm going to go a little lighter. I'm just going to use the 1 and the 2. Right. Nikki Hill has been superb in three starts. Admittedly, I guess as a gambler, we always got to think 1 to 20 is too short on a horse, but we can admit there's some horses that probably should be 1 to 20. I really didn't think Nikki Hill was going to be 1 to 20 in that kindergarten elimination series at the Meadowlands last Friday. But she was from post 8 and she got the job done very nicely, but, wow, man, that was a short price to take on her. I don't think she'll be that short tonight, but I guess she figures to be pretty short again. And right, the 2, Just Divine, I thought has been racing pretty well in that New York Sire Stakes series. Got the green light. She's finished second behind a couple times. Has obviously turned into a very nice one as well. So just 1 and the 2 for me here in race 3. So race 4 is a non-winners of 11,500 event in the last 5 starts, or non-winners of 22,000 in the last 10. It's on the pace for 20,000, and you just used 2 in here.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a... I think in some ways this is a wide open race, Edison, to be honest with you. You got some horses coming down in class here as well. You know, and every now and then, I mean, this is a good race to throw in this sequence right here because maybe this is a place you can get some value. I like the 7 East End coming down in class, maintains Trevor Henry here. 26-3 in the last quarter, last time out, got away way back in that race. And you know, as well as I do, Edison, you get back that far away and it really hurts your chances. He was bet down to, you know, almost 6-1, but he had 3 starts back. He's in preferred handicap and you earn your way up to that level. He's been in the preferred twice. So I know it's been a while in between wins here, but I'm hoping that this continued class drop, maybe East End finds an opportunity for his confidence here. And number 9, Better Buckle Up. You get Tietrich for a second week in a row. Timmy drove the horse, I thought, very well last time out. Takes a little extra class drop here. And, you know, I'll see if I can get 5-1 on Tietrich. You know, last week he was bet down to 2-1. But I'm hoping maybe in this field I can get some 5-1 action on Timmy from post 9. I don't know if that's going to be the case. But we will see. I do believe it's a wide open race, though, Edison, because some of these horses are really searching for form, searching for a confidence builder somewhere along the way. So I think you can find I think you can find some nice value here. I think the four, he's Swift is another one that certainly capable. When he was last at this level, he won and blew up the board at almost 25 to one. You know, for Jody Jameson, he picks up Jonathan Drury. He's been with him now for four of the last five starts. So got to figure maybe he blasts from that spot. Doesn't appear to be overwhelming gate speed. And that's why I think the four, he's Swift, might be one that could find a pretty large number for you here. He's been 21 to one or better in his last four starts.
So ultimately, I only end up using the one and the seven here, but I do have some other thoughts to throw in there. First things first, just because Robert Reed Jr. and I talked about it last night for a while, and I believe he said he even accidentally put it in the Horse Players Journal at Woodbine Mohawk before we all realized it. Tim Tietrich was not actually going to drive Lion Sentinel and was not going to be at Woodbine Mohawk on Friday night, but he is going to be there Saturday night. So Tim Tietrich is listed to drive your selection there of the nine on Better Buckle Up. So he will be there Saturday. So for the four, he's Swift. Yeah, that's one I actually included in that pick five sequence that night on August 14th when he won at 24 to one. Unfortunately, I wasn't still alive since it was the last leg of it.
That's always the case, isn't it?
It always is. But nonetheless, so he definitely, though, as you mentioned, that was the last time he was at this level and blew up the board then. So we'll see if he can try it again. But the seven East End, I definitely respect him on the drop, continued drop. And the one Highland Beach Lover that I throw in as well is kind of on that same trajectory. Was in the preferred back in August, and then since then's dropped to this level twice in a row from post four and from post eight, finishing second and third in those efforts. But he seems to like the front. He tried to leave and get to the top both times, and he was able to do so, but he's parked out to the quarter. He had to work for it on the way to the half. So from the rail tonight, if he's sent through hard there early on, maybe he'll get a chance to steal an extra, you know, a couple fifths of a second on that half mile time, and maybe that'll be enough for him to hold on this time and get the job done. So I'll go 1-7 in this fourth race. So for the payout leg, it's the Elegant Image for the three-year-old fillies, a purse of $414,000. It's on the trot, and who do you use here to bring
home? Well, I mean, it's a real talented field. I'm obviously Bella Bellini. Look, you're the bad thing about Dexter Dunn is he wins a lot of races, and you can't make a lot of money betting on Dexter Dunn. Unfortunately, what you can do sometimes is bet Dexter when he, you know, picks up a catch drive or something on a horse. That's probably your best chance to get a ticket on Dexter Dunn. She was back on her game in the Pennsylvania Sire Stakes final. Obviously, you and I saw her on Hambletonian Day. Very professional effort on Hambletonian Day. Really had to, you know, go at it in that final quarter, 26-3, very impressive. I mean, she throws in sub 27s, you know, like back in July, like it was going out of style. Last time out, you know, let's face it, got passed in the stretch, came back to win though, and to me, she's still the most talented horse. I probably am going to get burned because the obvious next contender in my mind, you know, is probably I'm Extra Special, who's been all over Canada, competing in Stakes Company and has done a lot of great things. Been on the board in 8 of 9. Going to have to go faster here, though. 53-3 is not going to win this race. And that leads me to my dark horse here. My dark horse here is the 10, Katie's Lucky Lady. Picks up Scott Zeron here, has been certainly very competitive in Ohio Sire Stakes Company. Finished second last time out in 53-1 on the half mile at Northfield. I think because of her tactics, Edison, I think she's going to enjoy the bigger track here at you know, Mohawk. And I think again, if Bella Bellini is not who she's been for some reason, I think this is a horse that's coming out of the clouds late in this one. Because I think the 9's going to blast from the outside as well for Filion. I think things could get, you know, mixing up pretty good here. This is a horse that's got some tactical speed, certainly to find position. Clearly, Scotty getting on her for the first time is a big concern. But at the same time, it's one of the reasons we look at, okay, we're going to Scott Zeron here. You know, Scotty's one of the top drivers in North America. So maybe that aids us here as well. Comes from great connections in Ohio. So I think if there's a horse coming out of the clouds and justifying that bombs away value on your ticket. I think 10 Katie's Lucky Lady is certainly one that could end up doing that. Loves to win. She's been an 8-time winner so far this year, been on the board in 14 of 16, always has something left at the end of the mile. And I think coming to the big track should agree with her tactics here. So if Bella Bellini's not, you know, her usual self, I think this is the chance for a big upsetter here in the final leg.
Well, Robert sold me on a couple of horses yesterday that I wasn't considering including in my tickets, and you might have just sold me on one here as well, because I do not use Katie's Lucky Day, but you made a good case for her for sure. But for me, it's 1, 7, and 9. Correct. So 7, Bella Bellini, got to respect her off that Hamiltonian Oaks win, and I'm sure the listeners that have followed the show have heard me say it many, many times, but I just still got to say how cool it was getting to ride the van to the backside with Dexter Dunn after he won the Hamiltonian Oaks, and just how cool and calm he was of just kind of, oh, yeah, I just want another, you know, $500,000 race. No big deal, you know. So Bella Bellini, though, definitely has been a really good foreman, right? She got back to those winning ways there in that Pennsylvania Sire Stakes effort. And I think she prefers the bigger track as well. So she'll get back to the 7-8 mile track here tonight. They also throw in the 1, I'm Extra Special, who I'm with you, I think is probably the next logical contender, but I'm Extra Special is actually 6-1 on the morning line. The next choice is actually the 7, or the 5, Donna Soprano at 7-2, who neither one of us use, but she's actually the second choice in the morning line. But I'm Extra Special, of course, 4-9 this year, gets the nice rail draw here, definitely in with a chance, has been racing pretty well, a second and third place finish in some stakes events here at Wood by Mohawk the last couple of weeks. And then for the 9, HP Mama B, she is one who does seem to have that early speed, but, you know, she raced okay from off of the pace back on August the 6th from post 11th from the second tier, got away 6th at the quarter and ended up finishing 2nd, so I guess she doesn't have to have the lead, so we'll see what Sylvain Filion chooses to do with her here in this spot, but it'll be 1, 7, and 9 for me to wrap up this pick 5. And to recap our tickets, Repeat Medhurst is going to be 3-9 with 2-8 with 1-2-6-8. With 7-9, with 7-10 for $12.80. And for me, it is 3-5-7 with 2-7-8, with 1-2, with 1-7, with 1-7-9, and that's a $21.60 play for me. And so, Pete, before we talk about a couple of the other featured races on this card, it reminded me of a question as you were talking about Bella Bellini that I meant to ask you in the beginning that I forgot about, so I'll ask it now. You also, as you kind of alluded to, got your first Hamiltonian experience this year to join us at the Meadowlands. So talk a little bit about what it was like to be at Hambo Day for the first time. And it was also my first Hamiltonian.
Yeah, I mean,
as well.
The fact that normally Navy Media Day is on Hamiltonian Day, and usually the post time for the Hamiltonian is much earlier in the afternoon. So it has, you know, precluded me, including my favorite Hamiltonian of all time, because obviously I'm a huge fan of Roger Hammer. He's meant a lot to my love of harness racing, not being there in person when Vivid Photo won. And I go back and watch that race on YouTube a million times, and I still get goosebumps when Ken Warkinson goes from the Pennsylvania Fairs to the Hamiltonian Winner's Circle. I still get goosebumps thinking about that. You know, Roger told me when he raced at Rosecroft earlier that year at a Maryland Standardbred event with Vivid Photo, he goes, Peter Michael, he goes, I'm telling you, if I could race this horse off a helmet, I think he's even better. And it was the first time he had done it. And everybody thought Roger was leaving because that's usually what Roger does. But he knew if he could work out a trip, and he worked out a perfect trip behind Classic Photo. So to be there, to see it, the fact that it was much later in the day, I went to Navy Media Day, and then I got in the car and headed up the New Jersey Turnpike, got there in time for the 7th race. I was there from the 7th race on. And just to see that day and experience that day, you know, standing behind the winner's circle the entire time, you know, watching the stars of our sport from an equine and human perspective come into the winner's circle. You know, when you see it on TV, it's one thing, but, you know, to see those people in person, to see their joy, to see their happiness, the owners, the trainers, it's just, it was really special to be able to experience. And if you're a racing fan, without question, I think you have to. You have to find your way to the Meadowlands for Hamiltonian Day. Just like, you know, I hope one day we can, you know, travel freely because I'd love to go see the North America Cup. Obviously, just a tremendous race there. So jealous of Ken Middleton with all the great stakes cards he gets to call in Canada throughout the course of the year. Racing in Ontario is amazing to me. I think it's the most amazing thing maybe in the world, with all the different tracks that they have. The sport is so supported from a horseman standpoint. They have fought through so many things to keep racing alive there. And, you know, I sat here in my basement watching, you know, Vance Cameron on Gold Cup and Saucer Night. You know, I want to get out to PEI for that race as well at some point. That's now on the bucket list that I've gotten the Hamiltonian off of the bucket list this past year.
Yeah, it definitely was very cool for me being first Hamiltonian this year. You know, normally for me, it's family reunion usually on that Saturday. And obviously working the Meadowlands kind of got me the pass out of it this year. And actually that family reunion ended up being canceled anyway. But even if it wasn't, I did get my excuse out of it this year. And yeah, definitely some good Canadian racing. I know we both occasionally like to throw a boom just like that in the call.
Oh, yeah. All right. Love me some Vance Cameron. But you know, I mean, think about that, Edison. I mean, if you watch that and you see – I mean, you can't move on the grandstand tarmac there. I mean, everybody is there. I mean, it's such a great local event. You know, what the Potomac Pace to us is what Gold Cup and Saucer Night is to them. They put on a tremendous show. And I know Ken Warkentin goes up there to be a part of the broadcast crew because he enjoys it so much. And, you know, for those local horsemen, it gives them, you know, an opportunity to have that spotlight. And look, there's only one Vance Cameron. Boom. Just like that. 27-1. I love it. Love it.
So, Pete, let's go on and talk about a couple of these featured races later on the card. Turning just one race back, we have race 6. It's on the trot for $159,600. It's the Ontario Sire Stakes Gold for the 2-year-old colts and geldings, and it's a full field of 12 in here, and the morning line is going with pretty heavy favoritism to the one Duly Resolved at 2-1, who I also like in here. He just has been so good, finishing second in the Wellwood, beaten only by a length by King of the North. In fact, he was that one length away from getting that automatic berth into the Mohawk Million next week. But in the elimination for the Wellwood, that's the race that still really impressed me. I mean, Let's Do It looked like he was just going to blow by through the stretch, and Duly Resolved just dug in and just absolutely refused to let the favorite buy him. And that was a really, really impressive win to me. Now, again, I will caveat yesterday by saying I did have him on top, so I was financially benefited by him winning. So maybe I'm biased, but I thought it was a really impressive effort. So for me, it's the one Duly Resolved on top. But before I ask your opinion on the race, Pete Medhurst, we have to ask your opinion on a name in here. I know one of your, I guess, favorite, least favorite, whatever horses on the Maryland circuit is Whipper Snipper, that I think you call Whipper Snapper a few times. How about in here, the two horse Kipper, yeah, Whipper Snipper?
Good luck, Ken Middleton. No doubt. And ironically, I mean, look, I mean, Kipper Whipper Snipper is going to be, you know, probably sitting right behind Duly Resolved in this thing for most of the race. So no doubt, Duly Resolved, very good. The one thing I will note, two starts back, you know, got away Paul McDonnell with a 58 second half. If they go 58 seconds to the half here, okay, great. So he had plenty left in the tank to dig back in, but that, you know, that's a trait that, you know, when you see a horse that sees a horse come up beside him and says, oh, okay, I got to grab on and I got to give you a little more. The horse that intrigues me, though, if you don't want the heavy chalk here, because I do believe Duly Resolved is going to be heavy chalk. I mean, he losing to King of the North, who's an unbelievable 2-year-old right now, is nothing to sneeze at. You know, Explosion, two starts back, finished third to Duly Resolved in that Wellwood elimination after breaking at the gate, and still came back and finished third in 27-2. This horse can stay flat. He could at least make things interesting as well. I think your main contenders are all right here in the 1, 2, 3 spots on the gate. If they behave themselves, I think you have a heck of an opportunity for a pretty good stretch drive between those three as they turn for home.
Yeah, certainly based on the morning line and kind of our analysis here as well, it does seem like the three favored ones have drawn that inside part of the gate. Explosion is actually the 9-2 second choice. 8-1 on Kipper Whipper Snipper, and then it's also 8-1 Drinks at Home, and Twinbee Archie is 6-1. Those two from post 9 and post 10. So those are the favored ones in the market. And again, this full field of 12 for this Ontario Sire Stakes Gold Division. So next, as we continue to march our way closer to talking about this Canadian Trotting Classic, let's first talk about race 8, the $100,000 purse for the Mohawk Gold Cup Invitational on the pace. And how do you think this race, Pete?
Look, I mean, it's really hard to argue against Alleywag Hanover right now. You know, Todd's done a terrific job with her, with him. He's only lost one time in his last five starts. You know, won the Houghton, won the McKee, won the Canadian Pacing Derby, and has maintained terrific form. And look, I mean, in that older group this year, you know, Catch the Fire's been pretty good. This Is the Plan has been pretty good. And Alleywag Hanover has had the answers for the most part. Catch the Fire obviously beat him at the Meadowlands back on July 31st. But when the big money's been on the line for the most part, outside of his effort in the Graduate on a bad track, Alleywag Hanover has had the answers. So it's hard to argue against him in my mind at this point. I mean, look, I mean, you know, Where Are We Vitals, not in poor form by any stretch of the imagination. The question is, can he go faster? I mean, you're gonna have to go faster here in this one. I mean, the question is who's got the pedigree here and the form to beat a horse that, you know, on paper is razor sharp. I mean, at one point we thought Century Pharaoh would be in a lot of these type races and race well. And, you know, in the Canadian Pacing Derby, I mean, obviously finished fifth. I mean, nothing to sneeze at. Came home 26-4, but you just can't get to horses like Alleywag Hanover, Catch the Fire, and This Is the Plan, who get on the choo-choo and do a lot of work. You know, does Wheels on Fire try to park Alleywag Hanover here, maybe, you know, from the inside? Do they gang up on Alleywag Hanover a little bit? I don't know, but here it appears to be Alleywag Hanover without much competition, if you ask me, here in this one.
Yeah, I mean, I there's been some horses I've talked about on the show that I've tried to pick against in the past, and it never really works. I'm just kind of on them, I guess, for the time being. And Alleywag's in that category. I mean, I know I didn't even include him in that pick four, the late pick four on Hamiltonian Day, and I was knocked out in the first leg after he came home with 48 flat to beat Western Joe, and This Is the Plan. Came home with 26 flat, final time 48 flat. I mean, you know, I could talk forever on how impressive this horse has been. So for sure, I think he is the one to beat. But yeah, the price I might consider underneath is actually the one, Wheels on Fire. You know, he's been pretty good, very consistent in his preferred events at Woodbine by Mohawk. He draws the rail, so Doug McNair will have options there. You know, he generally likes to do it from the front, but obviously Alleywag's, you know, blazing front halves in 54-3, so I'm not sure if Wheels on Fire wants to get tangled up with that, but I guess we'll see what happens between those two as well as the rest of this field. But for Alleywag, we'll start him at 8-5 on the morning line. Where Are We Vital right outside at 7-2. And then 6-1 on Century Pharaoh, 8-1 on Enavant, and double-digit odds on the rest for this Mohawk Gold Cup Invitational pace. Race 9, the Simcoe for three-year-old open pacers, a purse of $176,815, a field of 9 in here. And Pete, what did you think of this race?
I think this is more of an open race here. I think this could end up being one of the better betting races of the night. Certainly a buck a bet Hanover. With McCarthy and Alanya teaming up here. I mean, Buckabet Hanover has been racing in every major stake all over the place, North America Cup, the Hemp, the Adios, been everywhere. Off form, though, and the question you have to ask yourself, is it because of the competition, or is the horse maybe feeling the effect of, you know, 9 wins and 24 starts over 2 seasons racing against, you know, much the best every single time. I think a buck a bet Hanover, you know, Better Son on the far outside here again has plenty of stakes pedigree, but, you know, 3-13 on the year, but has been first or second in, you know, 6 of those 13 overall. You know, coming off of a good effort last time, Armor Sealster appears to be in reasonably decent form, but does he have the class to go against you know, those types of horses? Highland Beach Best is another one that, you know, you've seen at times go, wow, this is, you know, this is a horse that's got some talent, but doesn't put it together against the top level of horses. So It's a mild endorsement for me for a buck of bad Hanover, though. I think Armor Sealster is a horse that's really, I think he's a little fresher, and I think the form is not bad. The problem for him more often than not is Jody loves to race him from way back here. Good barn, good form. If you're looking to upset what I think will be the favorite here, I think Armor Sealster might be the potential for the upsetter here. Could say the same about Pirate Hanover if Jameson chooses that one. Good barn with Richard Moreau. This is a horse that was in the North America Cup elimination, but couldn't get into the final. So again, it's the horses that are just in that next level down from a class standpoint, Edison, against a horse that's been just banging it out with the best in the country all year long. And you wonder if those battles have taken something out of a buck of bad Hanover coming into this race here.
Well, I've only said it so many times on this show and to everyone else that'll listen, you know, Andy McCarthy, I know how highly he always talks about Buck-A-Bet. I know he still really likes this horse. He's obviously going up there to drive Alleyway or Buck-A-Bet. And, you know, I got to think he's going to pick up a win here somewhere. This is obviously a drop in class. I think, you know, maybe this is where he will get it done, facing a little bit softer competition. But, well, first of all, to answer your first question, Jody Jameson did actually pick Pirate Hanover. That will be his driver choice there. And so, you know, like I said, handicapping into that morning lines, I figured a Buck-A-Bet, you know, in my mind, I thought it might be the second or third choice, but I guess now I'm kind of looking over the field. I'm not sure who would be, you know, the favorite there for. So he is the morning line favorite at 5-2. So you said, yes, you think a Buck-A-Bet will be the favorite at post time. What do you think that price is going to be on him, though? I'll put you on the spot.
I think probably because it's McCarthy and Alanya. I probably think, again, because you're going to look at those lines and who he's been racing against from a class standpoint. You know, I think 7-5 is probably where it's going to stop. 7-5, 6-5, because I think there has to be some hesitation a little bit based on the form. The fact that Jody takes the 8, you know, probably, you know, probably people are going to probably bet, you know, the eight a little bit, Pirate Hanover, just because Jody makes that driver choice there. So that's another horse that, you know, the form is not bad. I mean, it's a horse that came home in 25-3, his North American Cup elimination. He finishes sixth, you know, against, you know, a Buck-A-Bet and Perfect Sting and horses of that caliber. So, you know, probably Pirate Hanover ends up the second choice here. You're probably not going to get the value you deserve if you beat a Buck-A-Bet Hanover. But I would say if Pirate Hanover or Armor Sealster, somebody like that is 5-1 or better in this race, it might be worth taking a shot in this one on them, just because a Buck-A-Bet Hanover, if he's not sharp, you know, if the door's open down the stretch, you know, the 5 or the 8 certainly could be ready to pounce in the final strides here.
Yeah, so a Buck-A-Bet at 5-2. Yeah, you know, I think I want a little bit better price. I'm not sure if I'd take 6-5, 7-5 on him, but I guess we'll see what the board looks like at post time. Pirate Hanover is your 7-2 second choice. Better Sun from the outside is 4-1, 9-2 on Lancaster Bomb, and you're right, 8-1 on the morning line on Armor Sealster. If you can get that, I think you probably want to take it. And then 6-1 on Highland Beach is best. But yeah, for sure, obviously, I think Jody's driver choice there probably influenced that morning line for sure. So next, Pete, final race to talk about. We'll talk about the big one, the Canadian Trotting Classic, the 3-year-old open trot for $606,500. And, you know, before we talk about the body of the field, let's talk about the also eligible list. There's one horse in there, and it's Dancing in the Dark M. So let's just pretend that he gets in. He's 7-2, the second, third choice in the morning line if he gets in. What do you make of him, given his recent lines?
Recent lines scare you. There's no doubt about it. I mean, this is a horse that, you know, has been first or second in 7 of 11 this year. But, Edison, it's gotten to a point where with him, it's feast or famine. I mean, look at all the money he has just sucked up through the vacuum cleaner here as of late. And that would have to scare you to death from a wagering standpoint. You know, he's good enough if he, you know, I mean, if he gets into the race somehow. So, you know, the ability is there. But, you know, how do you trust the inconsistency of the horse right now? Multiple breaks to me indicates, you know, soreness. He's obviously raced against, you know, some very talented horses throughout the course of the year, but perhaps soreness is coming into play here on this one. with Dancing in the Dark M. If he gets in, he's going to take some money. I mean, it's just, there's no two ways around it. I mean, 50 and 1 mile at the Meadowlands speaks volumes. Finishing second in the Muscle Hill, you know, but again, breaking at the wire there after nearly cutting that thing out, you know, where Jujubee was amazing, winning in 49-4 in that one. But if he gets in, you certainly have to respect him. Question is, ultimately, would he be the favorite? I don't think it's impossible to say that he would be the favorite if he does scratch into this race.
Yeah, just to read real quick for our listeners who might not have the program in front of them, here's the last six lines for Dancing in the Dark Game. July 31st in the Hamiltonian Elimination, makes a long extended break past three quarters. In the Muscle Hill on Hamiltonian Day, leads all the way from post five until the stretch where he makes a break and loses. As your so 4-5 favorite in Hamiltonian Elimination, was 1-5 in the Muscle Hill, then went to Lexington to the Red Mile on August 17th, from post four, finished second in there to Really Fast, who's, of course, a very nice trotter for Nancy Tactor, but as the 1-2 favorite, he disappoints again. Then he comes back at 4-5 at Vernon Downs in a stakes race, makes a break right after the start, and is just distanced from there, never involved at all. Goes to Woodbine Mohawk to the Good Times on September the 4th, ends up second in there in the elimination, does okay in that elimination, stays flat, but does lose to Fashion Frenzy as your 4-5 favorite. And then comes back in the final, where Fashion Frenzy wins again as your 4-5 favorite once again. And he makes a break while on the outside past three quarters first up. So some really concerning lines there. And he will have to deal with post 11, that second tier, should he draw into the event. But with that, let's talk about the actual field that is drawn in, this field of 10 for the Canadian Trotting Classic. And the favorite in here from 5-2 from the rail will be a $100 bill. It's 3-1 second choice on Fashion Frenzy coming off of that win against Dancing in the Dark. But plenty of other options and ways to go in here as well. And Pete, how'd you see it?
I think this is a deeper race than we think. Couple of horses here, in addition to the two you just mentioned. Spy Booth warmed up incredibly well for Nancy Tactor on Hamiltonian Day, included him in some exacta tickets there because of that, just because of the way the horse warmed up. Not surprised the horse won the Zweig. You know, again, a terrific effort there, was in what I thought would be decent form. But again, I mean, he'd been in against Captain Corey Really Fast, who's a really good horse. Really Fast was really good earlier this year. So every time Spy Booth showed up, he's been racing against some tough customers. The qualifier is really wacky, to be honest with you. You know, 30-3, 59-1, and then, you know, in the second half getting passed by a couple of horses. So that concerns me a little bit. What do we make of the Ohio Invader winning ticket here? Chris Beaver, sensational, sensational with trotters. Chris does a ridiculously good job, you know, with trotters. And, you know, I mean, Aaron's handled the horse incredibly well, you know, throughout this campaign, a perfect 10-for-10 so far on the year. He's won 339,000, has a mark at Scioto of 53-1, which is comparable with a lot of the other horses that have drawn in here. Certainly has the speed to overcome post 10 in this race. The question is how aggressive can Dave Miller be? You know, when you look at the one who can clearly to get out of there and will work out a perfect opportunity, you know, where's the hole come for Dave without having to go all the way to the top? You figure the six is probably launching as well. So maybe traffic issues hurt winning tickets chances in here. But man, if he can get away in a good spot, Edison, I think winning tickets got a chance, you know, to pull off an upset again, extending to the bigger track, just like we talked about with the other Ohio horse earlier, Katie's Lucky Day. I just think the tactics and the ability on the bigger track translates to being competitive here in this one. I think you're probably looking at a case where McCarthy lets them sort themselves out a little bit and then maybe rolls $100 bill once the hijinks are over in the first quarter, I think. But, you know, right now, it's not a sure thing by any stretch of the imagination. And I think winning ticket could come at a pretty good price here for Dave Miller if you're looking for an upset, because I clearly think the one's going to be the chalk. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He's going to have the asterisk next to his numbers at the end of this thing. But Fashion Frenzy's in terrific form. Spy Booth is capable, certainly, if they mix it up too much, he's capable of closing into this thing. I mean, you know Jingra. Yannick's probably leaving as well with Oki's horse. So, I mean, you could get enough horses mixing this up early here, and Spy Booth could come flying late in this one if he's on his game for a major upset as well. But that qualifier scares me with the way he gave way there. So, wide open race without Dancing in the Dark and in it. From a betting perspective, I think that's good. I think it's good for a lot of people here. I don't discount the 10 though, because of the speed to overcome the post there and stretching out to the bigger track. And I mean, $100 bill, man, he's been touring New York. You know, it's been all New York Sire Stakes, company for the most part. Got beat by Johan Palema in the 4 in range, in the Yonkers Trot, but it was an off track. But, you know, so I don't think $100 bill is a, super master lock, here in this one. You know what? If Logan Park gets away in good stead, this is a horse that always seems to have something on the end of the mile every time. So does In Range. So, I mean, you got a lot of different ways you can go here in a wide open race, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, definitely a lot of different directions to go. For me, the numbers that I threw in there were the 1, the 6, and the 9. So obviously $100 bill we've already kind of discussed. We'll circle back there at the end here. I got another question to ask you then. For the 6, Fashion Frenzy, of course, you know, I guess the big story out of the Good Times Final is Dancing in the Dark making the break, but let's not discount Fashion Frenzy. He trotted very nicely that night, a really good mile to get the job done last Saturday. And yeah, Flylight's been pretty good. Got a chance to, from post 9, follow the stablemate Captain Corey, who I hear might be an okay trotter himself, Mr. Hamiltonian no champion. Flylight got to follow the stablemate right around the track to finish second in the Pennsylvania Sire Stakes Consolation. They were a 1-20 entry, and they finished 1-2 without much hesitation there. But yeah, winning ticket. How about this for a morning line? In fact, I'll put you on the spot one more time here today. Winning ticket. What do you think the price is on the morning line?
10-1.
He is the longest shot on the morning line at 15-1, along with Macho Martini. They're both 15-1. So I don't think it's going to be 15-1 at post time, personally, but I guess we'll see.
I mean, give me David Miller, you know, on a horse that can leave from that spot. And, you know, I mean, again, this is when I get into, you know, we talk about horse that stays on their local circuit. In other words, winning tickets been on the Ohio Sire circuit. $100 bill. Basically, you know, has not left the state of New York for the most part this year. So, you know, how do you rate that against, you know, this isn't even the top bunch. You know, there's no Really Fast here. There's no Captain Corey here. There's no Jujubee here in this race. So it's going to be a nice check for somebody. I mean, In Range hasn't done a whole lot wrong. He hasn't won a lot. He's only 2-10 on the year. As a 2-year-old last year, though, he was 9-10 in the top, you know, in the top two in 10 starts. So, you know, the ability is there. But then you look at the line back on July 16th and you go, OK, well, Johan Palema, beats him in there. Bella Bellini in there. That's not that bad of a loss, even though it's a condition race. Gets into the stakes company, you know, wins a Muscle Hill division is the favorite. You know, the 5 Zenith Stride was in that event there as well. So, I mean, In Range has showed ability against other top trotters, you know, seems to hang around enough. And with Tietrich aboard, you know, you got to respect that. And that's probably going to get him bet a little bit in this race because he's got Tietrich. If Tietrich's willing, like you mentioned, Tietrich not coming up Friday, but willing to come up Saturday, you know, because he thinks he's got a chance to get some checks on some of the horses that he's going to be on. That speaks volumes, I think, to a lot of bettors. The fact that Timmy's going to come up there and take the drive.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I haven't gotten a chance to look at our card at the Meadowlands Friday night, so I'm assuming Tim's probably got some pretty good kindergarten drives, you know, for 2-year-olds at the Meadowlands, which is why he's staying there. I'm assuming he's at the Meadowlands. Maybe he's somewhere totally different. I never know what these guys on Grand Circuit time, you know, where they are night to night. But yeah, he's not at the Woodbine Friday night, so probably with us, I would assume. But so just some final wrap-up thoughts here. So first of all, yeah, so you mentioned David Miller, Tim Tietrich. So Tim Tietrich had been listed and has driven Dancing in the Dark and pretty much all of it starts. And I'm not sure if there's a lot we can read into this or if there's information that maybe you know that I don't know or someone knows. But Dancing in the Dark on the also eligible list is actually has David Miller listed to drive should he draw in. So I don't know if there's anything we can read into that. And then for $100 bill, Pete, just one last question before we wrap it all up. From a handicapping perspective, and I guess kind of it can be a case-by-case basis, obviously, depending on the horse and, you know, the reason and that kind of stuff. But what do you make of a horse like him or a horse in general coming off of a sick scratch or, in this case, a vet scratch or, you know, a judge's scratch, any kind of scratch like that, you know, assuming it's not like trainer entry error or something like that. But if it's like a sick scratch or a lame scratch, what do you make of a horse coming back off of that?
Yeah, it's funny, Edison. I think years ago in our industry, we used to that would terrify you. if that was the case, from a betting standpoint, the game has changed so much though. And by the way, Tietrich at the Meadowlands and Chester on Friday, just to complete that part of the puzzle. The game has changed. The game has changed dramatically. Horses come back from sick scratches and vet scratches, you know, a lot better, a lot faster sometimes than ever before. It used to be a major alarm bell with some horses, but, you know, just the ability. I mean, look at it. I mean, the horse has been on a half mile track, which by all means is the toughest because of the turns at a lot of these tracks, puts a lot more strain on the horses. So, without talking to Tony Alagna and finding out exactly whether the horse, I mean, that could have been as simple as a horse spiking a fever, last week. And, but I mean, it had to be fairly serious. You don't scratch out of a $200,000 race where you're the favorite, without something significant. But, again, it's a case of, Tony on behalf of the Crawfords, doing right by the horse, in that situation. I mean, this horse is a gelding, so he's going to keep racing. He's got a lot more racing ahead of him. And if you want him to be able to slug it out with the top trotters, in the open ranks for the next few years, to scratch out of a $200,000 race had to be fairly significant. But to be back in the $6,500 race, that's a pretty good consolation. So look, if you say, hey, we'll take the week off because we're racing for over more than $500,000 the following week. You leave 200 on the table to go for 606,000. You just hope that it wasn't anything serious. But again, I think it's a good sign that Tony and the Crawfords do right by the horse and come back this week and see what they have. There's no question this horse has made a nice improvement, from his 2-year-old season to now. Seems to have matured a lot more, seems to have those winning qualities, that you like in a horse. So we'll see what happens coming up this week. I mean, it is a month off without having raced in the net New York Sire Stakes finals. So could the horse be short? I mean, I guess in theory, that's the case. We've often, that's the way we've analyzed the game for years. Horse hasn't raced in a month. Maybe he's short, but let's face it. Tony Alagna is one of the top conditioners in this sport. He'll have this horse ready to go, and he wouldn't be here if he didn't have a chance to win.
Yeah, hopefully he will be ready to go. I do have a little bit more information to offer you on that. The DRF harness, the day of the New York's of the Night of Champions up there last Friday at Yonkers, tweeted morning line favorite $100 bill has been scratched, blah blah blah. And Tony, unsolicited by the way, so great to Tony to put this out there to let the public know. And he responded that he wasn't comfortable after warming up and acted like he tied up. We wanted his health and the betting public to be protected.
It's great stuff. I mean, because you know as well as I do, Edison, there are some in this business that would have said, hey, we're racing for 200,000. We're sending the horse out there if he can go forward. I think it's a heck of a decision by Tony to look out for the horse. And hey, believe it or not, somebody looked out for the betters. All right. We don't do that enough in our industry these days. So bravo on Tony for protecting the public, because that horse, obviously, Edison, was going to take a ton of money at the windows.
Certainly in that race, he would have been a heavy, heavy favorite. So for sure, kudos to Tony and the rest of the team there for, obviously protecting the bettors is always important too. But most importantly, of course, looking out for the horse's health. So always good to see there. And we'll wish him the best of luck should he be able to race in the Canadian Trotting Classic this coming Saturday. Hopefully he will be good and healthy and ready to go. So, Pete, that's just about all the time we have here for this episode. So before we wrap up, my last plug is, as always, for your free program to follow along with the race of Saturday night, go to woodbine.com/Mohawk/free-programs. And Pete will give you 30 seconds here to plug your radio show, some Navy sports stuff, some that sports stuff, whatever you want to cover.
You can listen 3 to 7 Eastern time every day on the Team 980 in D.C. For those of you outside of the D.C. market, you can listen in on the Odyssey app. It's a free app. Just pull up the Team 980 on that, and you can listen to the program. You can follow me on Twitter, at Pete Medhurst, on Instagram as well. I'm there. And on race nights at Rosecroft, you know, we tweet out a lot of pictures and stuff like that of the races as well. So look forward to making some new race fans, big fan of the sport, and can't wait for Rosecroft to open up just a couple of weeks away here now, as we will be back at it on Sundays and Wednesday nights coming up here the first weekend of October. Certainly looking forward to it, and rejoining you as we try to pick some winners back in the state of Maryland.
All righty. Well, Pete, once again, thank you so much for joining me here this morning to talk about this big card of racing at Woodbine Mohawk this coming Saturday.
Glad to do it, pal. Anytime.
And with the rest of our listeners, we'll wish you, as always, the best of luck in your wagering this Saturday at Woodbine Mohawk and any other track that you may wager on this weekend. And we will talk to you next time.